This is Disabled Girls Who Lift. We are reclaiming what's rightfully ours one podcast at a time. It's Mary Beth, Chloe, and Marcia bringing you the thoughts and unpopular topics to get you out of that ableist comfort zone.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Disabled Girls Who Lift. This is episode 34. How did we get this far, y'all? I don't even know, but thank you to all of our day ones. You've been with us since the long haul. I know we tried putting out episodes once a week. Now we're doing every other, and hey, we've kept up with it, but I am so excited for this episode. As you can tell from the title, we are Disabled and Cute today with Kia Brown. I am your host. It's Mary Beth from California here in the Ohlone tribe. Our guest joining us today is Kia Brown. That's Leah with a K. Don't get it wrong. You can find her on Instagram at Kia_Maria. She's joining us from Lockport, New York. You all know her from the infamous hashtag Disabled and Cute. She wrote the Pretty One book. We've got tons of pride here on both sides of the nation on queerness and disability. We'll talk about self-love, but I am so thankful, Kia. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I really am excited for this conversation.
I'm so excited. And Kia, you've been putting out so much content. I think it's been, has it been 3 years since you wrote your The Pretty One book?
The Pretty One came out last year in August.
Oh, a year ago. Okay.
Yes. The hashtag was in 2017. Feels like 2 years because this year feels like at least six.
I'm so crying and laughing at the same time. Like, way too much has happened this year. Oh my god. Wait, so I'm still so curious. Like, we read your book. We are such a huge fan. I know so many of us, so many of our listeners and followers know who you are. But tell us how you created Disabled and Cute. I know there's this battle, like, you know, you've got a twin. There are lots of twins out there who probably are feeling the same thing as you in this competition and how the family, how society sees you all and how you're supposed to live up to these expectations and kind of like be the same person or be better than others. But it looks like you have an amazing relationship with your sister. Does the hashtag correlate with one another? Like, how did that start?
Yeah, I think so in many ways. And I didn't realize it until this very moment. love when that happens.
That usually happens on this.
Right, on the pod.
Yeah.
I think that for me, it was sort of the light at the end of the tunnel. And so Disabled and Cute happened when I started feeling genuinely good about myself and in my disabled body. And so all those years before it, I was a complete cliche. I didn't like myself. You know, all the things that society feeds to you as a disabled person. I didn't like myself. I didn't think I was worthy. Very jealous of my sister, like desperate for a better new body. I'm doing air quotes. and I think that I had gotten to a point where things were going well with me professionally. Like, I was feeling good personally, and I was like, what is this? Like, this is usually over after 2 or 3 days, you know, that sort of like, oh my God, I think I like myself today. And then 2 days later, you're like, nope, I was wrong. I was foolish. But with the hashtag, it was sort of this me celebrating being in it for the long haul. And feeling like this for months every single day and, you know, saying things that I like about myself in the mirror day and night for however long it took until I believed them. And I'm a real champion of effort. I feel like without effort, you can't really get anything worthy done. And so I was doing the work every single day. It wasn't like, oh, I said it once and then I suddenly believed it and everything was gravy. It's like even now, every single day, if I'm in front of a mirror or not, I'll say for things I like, because I think that I want to make sure that this feeling continues and also like expands even deeper beyond what I had dreamed of in 2017 when I created the hashtag. Like, I want to make sure that I'm giving myself the love I also want to give to other people, which is so cheesy. But I do think that, like, with the hashtag, it was so connected to feeling free for the first time, feeling like I don't have to care so much what other people think or care so much how society itself views disability. I can work to change it, you know. We can do the work of making sure that we aren't, you know, just feeding into those stereotypes and just allowing, you know, because I'm a big pop culture buff, so I believe that, like, it's very important for us to make sure that we're not going to sit quietly while, you know, Hollywood in particular continues to pump out these ableist and sort of terrible narratives about what disability is, who it happens to, and, you know, just ends up killing us off at the end of the movie or before the TV show is over. I want to help, you know, do my part because I love it so much and I've always wanted to be a part of it to change that narrative as well, because I think that that narrative impacts how our society sees disabled people, and I think we need to change it, because I for one am exhausted by it.
Me too. And seriously, and then I mean the lack of representation, like, not only are we killed off in the movies, we aren't even being portrayed realistically. Like, able-bodied people are playing us and not necessarily knowing what it's like to live in our shoes. So we've got so many different layers. And, like, you brought up such a, like, powerful point in that you are changing people with, you know, in hashtags, social media, it's so fast, right? Mm-hmm. We come up with something and then it gets viral overnight, or people have been using this hashtag for quite a while now and don't necessarily know the meaning behind it. And thank you for sharing that with us. And also how so many women, not just disabled folks, but so many disabled women, so many disabled brown and black women are finding that empowerment through your hashtag and your life and your stories, because you're not saying you're not saying cute despite being disabled. You're not just saying disabled but cute. You're saying disabled and cute. Why can't we have all of these qualities that can define us before being labeled as just disabled?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's so wild is that we do have these qualities and we are these things. It's just there are these hurdles to getting other people to see that. And I know that, like, you know, I created the hashtag in 2017. And so, like, people had a lot of pushback in the community with my use of the word cute. But it really is just, I mean, if you don't like cute, that's fine. But it made me comfortable and I liked it. And I still believe today, like, it's not so much about the singular word cute. It's about the feeling, you know? I'm going to be this person in the world, and I'm not going to apologize for taking up space, you know. And either you get on the train or you watch it go by and you maybe catch the next one. It's the idea that, like, we deserve to be able to be our full selves, specifically in public spaces, and also to be treated with the respect that we often always give to others, whether they're rude to us or not. And I just feel like it's the idea that it's okay to show up and be yourself and to not apologize for whoever that person is, unless you're, like, a racist piece of trash.
Right. Please apologize for that.
Right. Please apologize for that. But, like, anybody else, just the idea that we deserve that same sense of respect and honor and equity and care that we give non-disabled people.
Most definitely. And I'm still confused as to why even our community has any problems with the word cute. We obviously feel differently by using different pronouns, different you know, emphasis on these characteristics that we have, like being a proud disabled nurse, being a proud disabled powerlifter. Why can't, you know, our identities be defined by ourselves without having been judged by the rest of the community?
That's the thing that I don't get. Like, the other day, somebody tagged me in this post by somebody that I've been following forever, and they were talking about how much they hate the word cute, and it's infantilizing, and they just don't like it. And I was like, that's cool. First of all, I didn't understand why I was tagged, but somebody brought up the hashtag, and they were like, I think that it's important to give disabled people the right to identify how they want to identify. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, great, but it's like, don't be dismissive, I guess. And
yeah.
I talked to the person about it, and they're like, I just don't like the word. And I'm like, that's fine. You don't have to. But it does remind me of when the hashtag first went viral, and like disabled people were writing like weird blog posts and articles about it. And I was like,
what?
The thing about the hashtag is that you don't have to use it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't like it, you don't have to use it. And I think that it's just interesting to me because, not to toot my own horn, but a lot of these hashtags that came after it are very similar with a couple, you know, word changes. And it's interesting to me that people can dismiss the work that I've done and then champion those hashtags or go and start their own. And it's like, obviously there's impact there that you are refusing to see. But, you know, for the people who get it and who were supposed to get it, I'm grateful.
Yeah.
You know?
And nobody said that you got to use, you know, what empowers me, you know, to define right. Your own self. That's so interesting. Now that makes a lot more sense. Like, not necessarily their reasoning for infantilizing the word cute, but we get that quite often, you know, this Disabled Girls Who Lift community. Obviously, mm-hmm. It started from a place where our powerlifting, our weightlifting, our just athletic community in general didn't have enough disability representation, and we weren't so much in our open categories. We had to be either in the Paralympics or in the disabled category, or there wasn't any in between. And mm-hmm. So obviously creating more awareness for how many athletes of us exist in all the different realms of disability, both invisible, visible, people who have so many different things
yeah,
and are a part of a sport and happen to be female or female identifying, we just felt as though that empowerment was necessary in that specific realm. But obviously getting critique on how, you know, we're not girls, we're women, or what about the men? Like, that's great, but we very much needed this for ourselves.
Right.
Have this. And if you want to be a part of the community, we have never been against that. And we have plenty of people who follow us and listen to us and have been a part of the podcast who do not identify as a disabled girl or even disabled. You know, we've had trans folks on our podcast that feel the same feelings of ostracization, and the fact that we can just have these types of conversations of how we're othered is more important than the labels that we're creating for ourselves.
Absolutely. Yes. With a good word. No, that's so true. Because like, I think people get caught up in this idea where it's like, I would do it this way. I would have said this. And it's like, well, why didn't you then? You know, don't critique the thing that you're like, I would have said it this way. You could have did it too. And I think a lot of that, like, not to toot both of our horns, but I think a lot of that is like this jealousy thing where it's like, I wish I would have thought of that first. Or people who tried to, you know, come after and do very similar things. It's like, I understand that you wouldn't have done it the way that I would have done it, but that's why I did it.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it was for, like, these things that start for us and for representation. Like, of course, we're not going to, you know, hit every mark with every single disabled person in the world, but there are going to be people who, you know, listen to your podcast and really need it and really feel seen and understood for the first time. Because that, there's this like inherent thing, I think, with disability where we get to a point in our lives where we go and search for someone who gets it or people who get it. And when you find that, it literally changes the way you see yourself and your potential and your worth. And I think it's important that we not tear down the things disabled people are creating over word choice.
Exactly. Exactly. Because it took so much freaking effort to get here to begin with. Like,
right.
Finding that self-love and that appreciation for our own beauty and our own worth on this planet was a fucking stepping stone. Like, let us have that.
Right. Don't take that from us. Like, and it's wild to me because they should already know what oppression feels like. So why are you trying to in turn oppress something that's doing good for the community as a whole? And everything, I just think that like that frustrates me that it happens to you as well, because it's just annoying. Like, why does everything have to be nitpicked? Obviously you're not going to be able to please everyone, because not everybody lifts, or everybody likes the word cute, or not everybody likes X, Y, and Z thing. But to try to diminish that work just because a man doesn't fit, or just because somebody else would have done something differently, doesn't mean that it's not worthy. People need to get off their high horses.
Exactly. And just let us live our lives. Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's also very definitive of how divisive this country is, right? Even people who, like, say we bring up a personal experience with the medical industry and how we're treated one day at a doctor's visit. You know, Twitter is powerful, Instagram is powerful, and that we can share these stories and find other people who have experienced the same things and then find this awakeness. But then you have other people who are like, well, I'm disabled, I've never experienced ableism. Like, okay, we get that. You probably have not realized the power of some people's words yet, but that's okay. But don't let your experiences diminish others.
Right, and those people kill me. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never experienced ableism. I don't even identify as disabled. Like, and it's just like, what are you getting out of that? I just want to know, like, what is it? Is it that they feel like distancing themselves from disability makes them like palatable to non-disabled people? Is it that they want so desperately to belong that they're scared of even claiming disability as anything? Because I understand that. Like, that was me for a very long time. I didn't want to talk about disability. I didn't want to acknowledge it. I wanted to be separate from it so badly. And I always think about those people and I'm like, that must be so sad for you that you couldn't find the other side of that, because it's just weird. And it's like they come out of the woodwork. It's the same thing with, like, you know, race. It's like there's always somebody that's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never experienced racism. Like, you have. And you just stuffed it down and told yourself it didn't happen to make yourself feel better, or you just feel like you'll take whatever you can get because you don't know your own worth. And it's like, don't chastise us for knowing ours and knowing that it's important that we share our identity markers, because they help shape the world we live in. And by pushing back on the idea that these things are inherently wrong because they're different, we're like, no, we're just gonna tell you who we are and not apologize for it and not take whatever it is that you feel like you can say to us because you're uncomfortable.
Exactly. Oh, most definitely. And you hit the nail on the head. And in these moments, we just, like, I have to have just so much compassion and patience for these folks, because also realizing that, okay, we recognize our self-worth at, thankfully, an earlier age, and we are all in different phases of our lives in our disabled bodies or in our differently abled bodies, and you can define your body however way you'd like, obviously without being condescending or demeaning toward other folks. But like, you are just recognize that you are in your own phase. And that's the same thing in fitness. Like, you don't need to hate somebody who has won multiple championships, who's in the top three of the sport, because you're not at that level yet. Just wait until that time comes and until that realization and that strength comes without bringing so much hatred into the world and into the sport. Like, we don't need to be in constant competition with one another. And that's where I've found this amazing thing we call female empowerment. You know, living in LA, and I know you want to move to California, and I'm not talking smack about SoCal. I'm over here in Northern California now, and just the difference between my interactions with women in Los Angeles, Hollywood area, and how much competition there was, despite how similar we are, you know. But if you're not wearing the right brands, if you weren't wearing stiletto heels to your high school math class, like, you were looked down upon and chastised. And on top of that, people with disabilities, people who were immigrants, we had to hide those identities in order to fit in.
Right.
And now we're coming out. Yeah. To assimilate. Like, I freaking lost my primary dialect. I was born in the Philippines, and I intentionally lost my Filipino language so I can assimilate and feel more American or more, you know, like my population. And I'm trying so hard to bring all of that back, because we're realizing how important our culture in, you know, these generations are, on top of how important it is to love our disabled body.
And oh, I'm so sorry that you, I mean, I don't know that particular struggle. Like, English has always been my, you know, primary language. I did take Spanish in high school and college, and then I lost it. So now I'm trying to get that back. But it's so wild the ways in which we're taught that anything other than Eurocentric beauty standards and the English language is somehow something to be rid of. And then we find out later, like, no, these are assets. These are things that we should be keeping, things that we should have been nurturing and championing along the way. And so I commend you, and I'm really glad that you are going to work to get that back, because it's wild, especially when we're young, it's wild the things we do to fit in. And, like, you don't realize how damaging those things are until you're older. And none of it matters anymore, because everything in high school feels like the end of the world or the beginning of the world, and everything is so important. And I just remember, like, my little high school self being like, I can't do this or that, and I can't talk, like, if we don't talk about disability and I pretend like I'm not one of them, then, you know, I'll just fit in and I'll be better and I'll make friends and someone will love me, et cetera, et cetera. And now that I'm an adult, I just turned 29, I'm the 19th. Yay. Now that I'm an adult, I'm just like, girl, I wish I could go back to my younger self and say, sis, chill. Like, I promise you it's going to be okay, and you don't have to do all these things you think will allow you to be popular, because none of this will matter.
Mm-hmm. And without those experiences, we probably wouldn't be who we are now. You probably wouldn't have written that book, started that hashtag, and had these conversations, these so important conversations, if you didn't go through the motions. And so when you see other people, you know, hating themselves and hating these identities, let them go through it. Like, it's probably going to hurt at the moment, because it feels like they're bashing us and our ideas and our stories. But, like, I'm just telling people, like, girl, come back to me in 5 years.
Right. Let me know. Hit me up in 5 years and let me know where you're at. Because I promise you won't be in the same place.
But I'll always be here. You know, you can always slide into my DMs. We can always have that conversation. But have a little more patience. And so on this podcast, you know, just in this community, we talk about intersections a lot. Just because it's a part of who we are, and, you know, without, like you said, ableism, there's no racism, vice versa. There's no sexism. There's no, you know, transphobia, queer phobia, all of these different things affect us on a daily basis, but then they also empower us. So did you kind of identify as all of those different things separately, or were they all dealt with separately, or everything all at once?
It was sort of a mixture of like everything all at once. Like I came out last year on Coming Out Day.
Ooh, yes.
A moment. I'm really excited to celebrate my year anniversary next month. But so everything else, like the racism and the disability and the reality specifically of racism in the disability community, I dealt with all at once and just sort of, I think the first thing I ever learned to love about myself was my black skin and being a black woman in particular, because I've been raised by amazing black women and black men who loved me and told me that I was worthy, even when I didn't believe it myself, you know? And so for me, it was like, okay, I'm black first. And then it took me until college really to sort of come into my disabled identity. And I was still struggling with it. So I began like my disabled journey. I'm doing all these air quotes, I'm sorry. I began my disabled journey sort of toward the end of college, after college, with me just learning to accept it. Because at first it was like, I hate this thing. Like, I wish it wasn't here. Like, I don't understand why I have to live like this. Like, why was I quote unquote punished or whatever? But it was really, and like, so the first pieces that I wrote professionally in 2015 were kind of in that vein, you know, very much like diary entry level writing, you know, where you tell all your business. That was me for, you know, at least for the first year or so. And so I really struggled there. And then before the hashtag hit, I started to do what Roxane Gay always says, look outward more and talk about your personal experiences, but how they could impact the larger society. And then I started to realize that, like, I was being terrible to myself, but really there's nothing inherently wrong with me. There was just something wrong with the way in which I saw myself. It was like a light bulb went off, and then I just started writing about, you know, my lived experiences, but less with a pity lens and more with like, this is just the reality of what I've experienced. And that allowed me to get to a place where, you know, disabled and cute could happen in 2017, because I was like, oh snap, I'm both disabled and cute. So it was really a wild journey, because I didn't deal with disability until much, much later.
And how much later in life was that? Was that in college?
It was like, okay, so I graduated in 2013. So I wouldn't say that I started dealing with it until about 2013, 2014.
Okay.
And it's a weird thing to say that you're like dealing with disability late in life when you were born with it. So my cerebral palsy, like, happened to me in 1991. Shout out to me, a Virgo. And so I just was sort of always putting it to the side, never wanting to talk about it, never wanting anybody else to bring it up, never wanting to acknowledge that it existed outside of my own hatred for it. It really took me going through that particular experience to realize that, one, instead of being embarrassed of the girl that I used to be, two, that I need to be embracing her and, you know, apologizing for, one, being embarrassed, but also letting her know that we're not in that place anymore. And even if I can't talk to my younger self, there is a part of me that believes my younger self is still within me, and she sees the growth that we have made, and she's just like, all right, I didn't think this was possible, but I don't hate it. And that was always the goal.
Definitely. And I mean, you might think that you started at a later age, but 7 years ago, you were 22. So many people that I know in the community hadn't even found that empowerment until 30, 32, 35, even like 55 years old. People have come out and said, I haven't started, you know, quote unquote, dealing with my disability and my, you know, finding more empowerment in this body until a much later age, because these conversations started really, it feels like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we haven't been talking about disability in mainstream media enough. It's right. Not out in the movies. It's always through the eyes and the lens of a non-disabled director or writer or actor.
Right. Who knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who is always never the thing that they're portraying,
yeah,
but something completely different.
Yeah.
You know?
or was the caretaker. And hey, we love our caretakers. We love our, you know, assistants. And they do experience a lot of this with us. You know, they see the pity that we have of ourselves when we're like, when we can't get out of bed or we're hating ourselves and all we have to talk to right now is our aides or our caretakers. But these mm-hmm. stories still need to continue coming from the lenses of disabled people.
Right, because there's nothing like it, you know? There's nothing like having something told by the person who knows what that experience is like. There's nuance missing a lot in these stories. And I think that's why I get so frustrated, because I'm like, if you just had disabled people in the room, if you had actors acting in front of the camera and disabled people behind the camera, this movie could have been good. Mm-hmm. You could have avoided all of these ableist tropes. You could have stopped yourself before you did some magical cure thing. Like, it would have just, I think that it's just frustrating because it's like, these people then hop out of disability like it's a costume, get awards for their bravery and their portrayals. Ugh. Of disability, and it's like, meanwhile, disabled actors can't get work to talk about their own experiences.
Exactly. I am so tired of it. And they're horrible at portraying what it's like to be a person who's disabled. Like,
so bad at it. Oh.
It's like the same excuses that other directors or casting agents are saying. Well, there weren't enough Black people in the room to cast. There weren't enough people in the pool. There weren't any disabled people who applied. Like, you aren't looking hard enough.
Right.
They're, you know, not. How,
and I love the ones that are like, oh, this is a period piece. And I'm like, oh, so Black people hadn't been invented yet? Like, what do you mean? Like, you can't just say, oh, this is a period piece. So Black people weren't invented yet. Mm. Either were disabled people, I guess. Okay, cool. Awesome. Amazing. Great. Great to know. When were we invented again? Was it 1980? Or when did we show up on the scene is what I want to know. Because it's just, I think that these excuses are tired, and it's frustrating that they're even allowed to be used anymore.
Yeah. And not to mention, history was written in the white lens, in the Eurocentric lens. Like, everything mm-hmm. that we read in our freaking American history textbooks are wrong.
So, and so wrong.
Black and brown people, disabled folks, we are the biggest minority, and we're not even in the storybooks.
Right. It's just like we never existed at all. And it's interesting to me because the people who know and love us get it, and us, we get it. But the people who don't think they know anybody who's disabled just don't understand what it is that we're upset about. But I think that if it was to be reversed, you know, then they would get it. If it was happening to them, they would understand.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. And it's just so funny that when we like sympathize with people or try and like have these conversations with people who have opposing views, like, we have to sugarcoat it and like water our experiences down so that other people can understand it. Because if we're too outrageous in our claims, they'll be like, no, 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 no. You're too liberal for me. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So yeah. I don't want to take away from the fact that it is almost your 1 year anniversary, or it passed already. Yeah. Your 1 year anniversary of coming out. I am so, 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 so happy and proud.
Did it happen already? October 11th.
Oh, okay. It's next. Yes. It's in a few weeks, actually. Okay.
Yes. Soon.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's been a year or so since I've been out too, but.
Look at us.
Bisexuality. How do you feel about the pansexual identity? Do you feel like there's a lot of tension there, or we're one and the same, or it's just a terminology thing? Same with using the word cute versus girls versus, you know.
I think that it depends on the individual person. For me, I think that there's a lot of overlap with them. They're not the same thing, I don't think. Mm. But I do think that there's a lot of overlap there. And so for me, like, I'm comfortable right now with bisexuality, you know? So that's the identifier that I use. But I do think that, like, they share some of the same principles.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Like, we love all genders. That's
right.
Just it.
All of them. Right.
that's it.
But shout out to everybody. Thank you for being attractive. I don't know. Yeah,
exactly. Just make me laugh and we're good.
Right. That's really it. Like, if you can make me laugh, oh, I'm in. I'm sold.
So how did that happen in your family, in your circles? Like, tell me about your coming out story. Like, okay. It's still hard for a lot of us, yeah. But we love to hear it.
Well, I knew for a very long time, as one does, but I was, like, in California.
Yes.
The West Coast.
The best state to come out
the
in.
The best love, right. And so I was, like, I did like a week long stay because I flew for my birthday / you saw the book present to California with my best friend, or to see my best friend who lived there at the time. We went to see the Jonas Brothers in concert. It was amazing.
Yes.
And so after that, my film and TV manager, Rachel, shout out to Rachel, she was like, hey, can you stay longer so you can do some, like, general meetings or what have you? Like, we'll just, because I was in Long Beach. So they came and got me. I did, like, some work for that week. And then the trip was winding down. And it was coming out day. And I was on Twitter, as one often is. And I was like, hey, Twitter, like, just so you know, I'm bi, right? And I closed out Twitter. And, like, people were being really nice about it, but I closed out Twitter, and I, like, went back to watching House Hunters on HGTV, because that's all the hotel was, like, playing clearly, and I love HGTV, so I was like, okay, this is it, I'm sold. And so I was watching House Hunters, and then my sister texted me, and she was like, are you gay? And I was like, no, I'm bi. And I was like, oh, crap, like, I forgot that we had followed each other on Twitter, like, I'm... I didn't plan it out well at all. Like, I did. I told the internet, basically, before I told my family. And then the next day, before I got on a plane to come back home, I texted the family group chat. And then I put my phone on airplane mode.
Oh, my God. You're horrible.
Yeah. The worst. The worst. And I put my phone on airplane mode. And then I got home. And my sister, and it was, like, because of the time change, I got home at, like, almost 2 a.m. And my sister, bless her, because I was like, I am not trying to take an Uber. But she picked me up. We talked about it on the way home in the car. I came home. I went to sleep. The next day, I got up. I went into my mom's room. We talked about it. And then I fielded, like, different calls from my immediate family for, like, the rest of the week. And that's how it happened.
That would be, you're worried, like, is she okay? Is she alive? What's going on?
I literally was like, all right, okay, here it is. I gotta get on the plane now. Bye.
Put your asses on airplane mode. Honestly, right. That is the best way to do it. Like, I will take care of you when I land.
Right.
After I get
a
good night's sleep.
I will worry about it then. How did you do yours?
I feel like I had a lot more anxiety. And even though, like, we kind of have this feeling of how our parents or our circles are going to react.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been a huge part of the Berkeley community for a long time because I went to school there, and then I worked there immediately after. So it'd been 10 years, and it's very liberal, and tons of my friends are gay out, are in poly communities. And so I came out as both poly and bi at the same time because I had a male primary partner. And so having all of this like confusion come out at once too was hilarious because they're like, but you're with a guy.
Yeah.
what do you mean? You're not, this is just a phase, you
oh,
know?
Yeah, yep.
Because, you know, that's the shitty thing about bisexuality, and that people think that you're just going through the motions and then you'll come back to being straight and you just wanted to have this like fun experience of,
yeah, and that's just not the way it works.
That's not no bisexuality forever,
right?
But yeah, so I feel exactly. I'm so happy, like more and more when I find more like bi folks, I get jittery. I love it.
So do I. I like it's like soul restoring. You're like, yes. Thank you for existing.
Exactly. So it's just funny because I knew that I was going to get the most support from my Berkeley community. And so I came out to them before anybody else. And it took me a few weeks to like call my mom, have that conversation, call my mm-hmm. stepdad. I still haven't had that conversation with my real dad. He has schizophrenia. And so mm-hmm. like, all he understands is who my boyfriend or my partner is at the time.
Yeah.
And so it feels as though like I don't need to come out to him until I have like a female primary partner to introduce to him. I don't know. It's just
right.
a different dynamic of the types of conversations I have with
him. Are you still with your primary partner?
That's a complicated question.
Oh, why not? I don't want to be nosy.
No. we are taking a little bit of time apart. Mm-hmm. I just moved into my own apartment.
Congrats.
We've been in each other's lives for a while, and so finding ourselves independently and, you know, having just come out a year ago, like there's a lot. A lot that we need to go through. And I just saw one of your posts where you're like, I am so proud to be single and loving my body and loving my life and just being so happy. And so many of us, I think, need to hear that and say that out loud more often.
It's wild because I literally, that's not even what I'm used to feeling. Like, because for the longest time, I was like, oh my God, I can't wait for somebody to love me. Like, I'm so desperate for someone to see my worth romantically. And then, like, at the top of this year, shout out to quarantine, I had, like, two situationship things happen, right? And one of them ended terribly. The other one ended amicably. And, like, that person is a nice person, and I wish them well. But I just started thinking, like, I went through both of those things, and I think that they were important, you know, for my journey or whatever. But I think that, like, now that I have, I realized that before it felt like I was missing out on something and that I was just going to never know what it's like for somebody to be attracted to me. And then I had those two things happen, like start fiddle and then, like, you know, fully burn out. And I was like, oh, I was expecting to be like very sad. You know, when the last one ended, I was like, oh, it'll be like, if this is gonna like suck. And it did for the first couple of days. And then I realized I was like, well, first of all, I wish this person well. Like, I'll take what, you know, I learned in this experience. And it was very mature of me. I was like, I'll take what I learned from this experience and, you know, hopefully use it for something in the future. But right now, I'm okay not having someone there.
Right.
It was literally, I think it was me being like, oh, so this is what it's like to be wanted. Cool. I enjoy it, but also I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now that it's not a thing anymore, you know?
Yeah. Which, and yeah, like, thank you for that experience.
Yeah.
Right.
And I literally, like, when the last thing ended, I was like, thank you. I was like, this is going to sound so weird, but thank you for that experience. And like, she was like, you're welcome. Like, okay. Like, you know, have a good life. See you on the internet. Like, it's just, I think that it's so much nicer when something ends amicably, because the first one I was like, oh, so sad. I was like, oh, this is my fault, like, this must mean that I'm unlovable, blah blah blah. And then the second one happened and I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe that's not entirely true. And then it ended and I was like, I'm gonna be okay. And I told my friends, I was like, I'm gonna be okay. And they were like, yeah.
Yeah,
we know. And it was just like nice to be able to finally feel like, even if I don't have romantic love right now, I'm not opposed to it in the future, but I'm also not desperate for it right now. Like,
hey,
I'm okay with like friends and the family that I have, and I'm okay with that love. And even though I'm not closed off to the idea of it, I'm going to be okay with what I have.
I'm still going to plug it out there. Kia Maria is single and available.
She is.
But yeah, exactly. It's so funny too, because you think back to it and you're like, dang, 27, 28-year-old Kia would, like, this is a very different response than 23, 22-year-old Kia would have had.
Oh, yeah. 22 would have been like, yeah, right, sis. What do you mean? This is our sole purpose in life, to right. be booed up, you know? To be booed up, loved up on, you know, cared for. And I'm like, okay, but now that you've had that happen, I promise you that, like, one, I think when it first happened and the first one ended, I was like, oh, it's never going to happen again. Like, this was my only chance. This is my shot at love. Remember that show? This is my shot at love. And I, you know, biffed it. But time went on and another thing happened. And it wasn't like, I think before, the good thing was before the second situationship happened, I had already been like, you know what? No, that first person was like emotionally and verbally abusive and I didn't need that. And
there,
like,
you go.
They had their own issues and that wasn't on me. Because initially I was like, oh, I did something wrong. But really they were just kind of a terrible person. And I was like, good, glad to be done with that. And then the second one, it was like, oh, we're not good for each other, right? But I respect this person and I wish them well. And I hope that they're happy or that they find happiness with whoever that might be. But it's not going to be me. So it was just a very nice experience the second time around.
Exactly. Exactly. And a more mature experience on all parts too, it sounds like.
Right.
So I appreciate that. Okay. Oh God, Kia, we could talk for hours. And we always say this too. Once you're a guest, you will always be a part of the family. So if there's something on your mind, you call us up and we will record an episode or just chat.
Yes, please. I was going to say, I'll just invite myself back. Like, hey guys.
There was a question too that came up, because this is coming up a little more on our feeds and I don't want to end this without asking you, but especially since you're a writer, you're a journalist, you do a lot of screenwriting, what are your thoughts right on person first language versus identity first language?
I switch between the two, but I prefer disabled person. Mm. Normally, like, if I'm talking to somebody or I'm writing something, I'm gonna say, oh, this person is disabled, not a person with a disability. Because sometimes when you say person with a disability, disability feels like a carry-on, you know, like a mm-hmm. like an added bag.
yeah.
And I'm just like, no, I'm disabled. And like, that's like, I think that both are valid. Like, I try, like you said, to hold space for people no matter where they are. I personally don't like differently abled, But I think that person first versus identity first, like, use whichever makes you comfortable. But for me, I like disabled person because disability is inherently a part of who I am. I'm not a person with it. I'm a person who has it. And sometimes I feel like with person first language, you know, like Kia is a person with a disability or with cerebral palsy. It's like, I'm not with it. I'm not standing next to it. Mm-hmm. We're not hanging out. We are one.
It's not just a dress you take it off after a long day, right? Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. I wasn't just hanging out with you and then I was like, oh no, I gotta go home and I'm on deadline. So let me leave you here at, you know, the library, 7-Eleven, like the McDonald's parking lot. Like I can't just drop it off. And I think that sometimes the person first language makes it seem like you can just pick it up and drop it off, put it on or take it off. And so I don't usually ascribe to that. But I did use both in my book. So I think that those two are fine. I personally prefer when somebody's like, oh, this is Kia, she's disabled.
Yeah.
Not, oh, this is Kia, she's a person with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. I get that. And you put it in such a good way, especially for someone who has so much empowerment and like, who has all of this strength in this identity. I definitely have this long list of identities when I, you know, introduce myself in a safe space, in a space where I'm like, I am a Filipina disabled immigrant, bi, poly woman, among all of these other things, but this is who I am first.
So we absolutely add that in.
There you go.
Very, very cute. You're welcome.
Thank you. Oh, I haven't heard that in so long. I needed that.
Well, allow me to be the one to tell you. Woo. Okay. But yeah, no, see, it's important that you have that safe space to do that and that you are given the room to do that. Because mm-hmm. I think sometimes people are like, somebody said to me, they sent me an email and they were like, don't you feel like you identify as too many things? And I was like, no, because I'm a fully realized human being. And because those things that I identify as might make you uncomfortable doesn't mean that they are inherently bad.
Damn. No, that would be, I'm sorry, too vanilla to not identify as all of these things. Right. I'm also in the kink community, so find me there.
Right. Shout out to me. I'm also doing this, this, and this. Yeah. I think it just proves that you're like, you can be a badass.
Yeah.
And be all those things. And like, by not ignoring one for the other, it just means that you belong more places and that you can find people who get it.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, just being like, oh, I'm sorry to Susie's, but oh, I'm Susie and I like baking bread and I baked bread at the beginning of quarantine and literally that's my personality trait. Like, no, you want to be able to be like, I'm this person, I'm that person, I'm also this person, I also enjoy these things, because it just opens you up for a more beautiful and engaging and inclusive world.
Yeah. And you said that you probably brought up both in your book. I don't know if it's because you were speaking both in first and third person, but if you're talking about other people who identify as disabled or differently abled, do we kind of switch that, right? Because we have such a strong identity of ourselves, but other people probably don't see themselves in the same light, right? So you want mm-hmm. to bring that humanity first. Is that your reasoning for using both? Okay.
Right, because I talk about how, like, there's a chapter in the book called Is This Thing On? And I talk about the importance of identifiers. And I talk specifically about the things that I don't like, but also that disability is not a monolith. Therefore, some people do like, you know, differently abled. Some people do like disabled person or person with a disability, or some people even like handicapable, which I don't really get, but shout out to you and your choices, I guess. And so for me, it was very much important for me to be like, here's how I feel about this thing. I'm not speaking for everybody else. I wouldn't pretend to. And here's what other people might use and how it's important for you to ask the person you're speaking to how they would like to be spoken about. So yeah, I did. I was interchanging them specifically so that people knew that it was possible for disabled people to want different things.
I love that. I love that because here we make space for everyone. Even the non-disabled folks who don't identify as so now or never, because you know we're all going to be disabled once in our right. lives.
We're all going to join this party at some point.
Might as well join it now.
Right. So. Might as well see if you can find a seat that's comfortable.
Exactly. We've got plenty of room.
We have cheesecake, cookies, like...
Oh, I love like constantly saying that because so many people in this world do not recognize that idea. It's just so funny. Like, oh, I don't have a handicap sticker. I don't have a handicap like parking pass, or I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm not disabled. But like, no, let's set this straight now.
Right. Like, please.
I got to throw in a question about fitness on there for all of us who are joining in through powerlifting, weightlifting, what have you. But what is your favorite way to move right now?
I like to move toward the door for delivery packages, personally.
Or to the fridge.
Right, or to the fridge. I need to be better about working out because... I used to use the excuse, I was like, well, you know, things aren't really made accessible for disabled people. I would love to be like, I don't know, because I just feel like it's not accessible. That was my go-to for the longest time. But I think the longer that we are in quarantine or lockdown or whatever you want to call it, the more I'm like, sis, there are so many disabled people who kill it at the gym. You literally have no excuse. What are you doing? Get it together. So I wanted to say this before I go. I think that you and the community full of badasses, just like absolutely inspiring, but not in an inspiration porn way, just in a
love it.
You should be able to do a little bit of something something way, you know. Like, you don't have to do what they do, but you really need to stop acting like, you know, fitness just isn't for you, because it's for everyone. Mm-hmm. So I think that the most walking that I do is honestly to and from, to get deliveries or like to go to PT. Like, I do the machines at PT once a week.
Oh yes. Hey, I mean, that's movement, you know, and like, we're not here to bash anybody. And right. The thing too is like, we find outlets in so many different ways. You find outlets in writing. You find outlets in just expressing yourself through poetry. Girl, we've read your poetry. It's amazing. And sure, it doesn't hurt to move, even if it's stretching in the middle, like first thing in the morning, but I just love that we've found these different ways to make ourselves happy every day.
Right. And I think too, like, we deserve that happiness. And mm-hmm. so we deserve to like also nurture it and find ways to keep it going and growing, especially now. I think now more than ever, happiness feels like you're stealing it away from something, like you have to keep it precious and keep it to you. And honestly, for me, living in a world where being both Black, disabled, and queer, all these three things, it's like targets on your back. And finding joy is so much a part of my ability to keep going, is to find joy in every day, whether that's wearing a cute lipstick, hitting on a podcast host, whether that's like wearing something that I think is cute or what have you, and just trying to find small pockets of joy in every day is really what's keeping me going right now. And so, I don't know, I think that whatever it is that floats your boat that doesn't harm other people, go for it.
Yeah. Oh, what a great way to end this. So you're making me feel all the feels right now, because I, especially now, have been saying every day that we wake up, we have to be thankful for, because, you know, it's such a crazy freaking world out there. Like, our family has lost 3 people in the last 11 months.
Our
world, our communities are losing people every freaking day, you know? And having these conversations about our identities is still such a privilege.
Right.
In many ways, you know, like, yes, we are oppressed. We acknowledge that. We overcome this. We like find community in this, but there is still so much privilege in having a freaking podcast, being able to write a book, just like, and so I don't know. I love meeting people like you. I need more people like you in my life.
Well, thank you.
I just need you in my life every day.
Okay. I'll be there. I'll show up. I got you.
Come over to Cali.
Yes. Listen, I'm coming. I missed it so much. I was literally telling my manager, I was like, listen, the second that Rona releases her claws on the world, I need first flight out to Los Angeles. I was like, you can book me, because she always likes to book me in back-to-back meetings. I'm like, you can book me in like 6 meetings back-to-back. I don't care. I just want to be on the West Coast. And she's like, okay, you say that now, but get ready.
Yeah, just wait until fire season ends and you'll be good. We will welcome you with open arms.
Yeah,
but okay. Kia, let everybody know where they can find you. I mean, for those who don't already follow you and aren't in your world.
Okay. You can follow me and find me on both Twitter and Instagram at Kia, K-E-A-H, underscore Maria, M-A-R-I-A. No, that is not my middle name. My middle name is actually Nicole. It's a long story about a nickname that took off. And you can also find me at KiaBrown.com. All of my work is there on my little website. She's cute. Definitely go check her out. We stan. But yeah, I'm all over the internet. I'm even on Facebook at the Kia Brown. I don't update it as much as I should, but there's that in case you like Facebook. And so yeah, I'm on the internet and yeah, most places at Kia underscore Maria, talking about cheesecake, cute girls, and how I really, really, really wish that they didn't cancel Pitch on Fox.
Oh man. Oh man, Kia, it's been so amazing. If you want to leave any last words or last little words of advice for other people who may be younger in the process or just younger in age who might identify as Black, disabled, queer, anything that might relate to you and just feel all the things that you're feeling, what are your words of advice to them?
My words of advice to you, dear friends, are, I know that it's really hard right now. I know that sometimes you can't really see the other side and it feels like it's a never-ending slog to get through a day. But what is so important to you right now in terms of fitting in and caring about what people think and not being too different, all those things later in your life are going to be the things that make people want to be around you. They're going to be the things that make you feel like your best, most important self. All you have to do is get to that point. And so whether it's getting out of bed in the morning or ordering in food or, you know, passing your history test or your math test or whatever school thing you have going on right now, whether it's literally waking up to write some poetry and then taking another nap, or it's, you know, buying your favorite thing or wearing something you thought you lost but found again, whatever it takes to get you through one day at a time, get through those days the way that you can, and then you'll get to a point where you'll feel like who you are in all that you are is enough, right? You'll get there to that place. But let me tell you now, who you are as you are right now is enough. And all you need is somebody who believes in you. And let me be that person. I believe in you. I'm already rooting for you. You're doing amazing. You're going to be the best version of yourself. You just have to get there. And on the other side is a light and a life that is beyond your wildest dreams. Trust me, I know that firsthand. Sounds super cheesy, but it's so true. Just keep going every single day, even when it feels impossible. And know that wherever you are in the world, there is a random Black disabled woman named Kia Brown who is rooting for you every step of the way.
Oh yes. No one could have said that better. And that will be on her next book, y'all.
Yeah, that'll be the next one.
Thank you so much for that. That meant a lot to every single one of us. I love you. I love all of you listening. Thank you, Kia, so much for having this conversation with us. And
thank you for asking me to have it. Oh my God, it was so fun. Like I love these sorts of things, and I love being in community with people who get it. It's so nice.
For life. We are in this community for life. We are stuck with each other whether we like it or not.
Exactly.
All right. Disabled Girls out.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Disabled Girls Who Left. We appreciate all of your support and everyone who's taken the time to show us some love. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, or write a review of our channel. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Player FM, Google Podcasts, and more. You can also find us on Instagram @DisabledGirlsWhoLift.